What's going on? What's happening, Africa? This is Jackson Vunganyi right here in Washington, D.C.
And I'm Nadia Sami. Thanks for joining us. We love to have you on board. This is Upfront on the Voice of America. Hot, hot.
Upfront is a show that explores issues
that affect your daily lives. Don't move. Don't move that dial. Get your snacks. Get your cup of tea or your cup of coffee. Put your feet up. This is Upfront. Cheers, cheers. Clink, clink. We engage you, the listener, and interact on a different topic each week. We've got loads of good tunes, lovely music, and lots of analysis to keep you going.
And interviews from experts or you young people telling us what you think about our daily topic.
That's always the best part of the show, Jackson, to hear what the listeners have to say. There's always lots of juicy comments and lots of different perspectives. Absolutely,
so stay tuned. Welcome to Upfront on the Voice of America. My name is Jackson Vunganyi. In the last decade, many studies have continued to show a positive outlook for much of the African continent. This is good news for a continent in which over 60% of the population is under the age of 25. But as the continent continues to rapidly industrialize, the one sector that is continually falling behind is agriculture. And even though many African communities depend on agriculture for both commercial and subsistence purposes, agriculture still counts for just 33% of the continent's GDP. In fact, the World Bank estimates that Africa has more than 50% of the world's fertile and yet unused land. So there's a lot of unused potential right here. Few countries have made modest investments in agriculture, even so, at a paltry rate of about 10%, according to many studies that we've seen. And that's just 10% of their national budgets. Many decide to invest in other sectors. But studies continue to show the importance of agriculture in creating a sustained economic growth and high-paying jobs. For a continent that has high rates of youth unemployment, this would be the right sector to pull the millions of young unemployed people. But unfortunately, for many reasons, as we explore on the show today, but aside from investment by governments, even young people have not really bought into farming as an alternative source of employment and income. And that's because agriculture is not glamorous and it continues to suffer from entrenched negative perceptions. In the minds of many African youth, a farmer is somebody like their parents or their great parents doing hard manual labor. That's not something that many of these young, educated African youth aspire to. And so the challenge for our governments is to invest in ways that create that appeal, to convince young people that agriculture can be profitable, it can be competitive, and can also be dynamic. What about you? What do you think about this? Have you thought about working in the agriculture sector? If not, why not? Let's talk. This is Upfront on the Voice of America.
I think if youths get involved in it, it can increase on the production, since it deals with production of foodstuffs and each and every time we eat. So I think it can bring about economic prosperity since we buy food each and every day. Young people feel it's a dirty job and they run for white collar jobs. Yeah, I think they run for white collar jobs and they have a negative attitude towards agriculture.
Agriculture can help the young people in very many different ways. First of all, those who have been idle will also get some employment through, for example, maize, buying beans when it reaches the season. They have some money or profits made out of that. And at the end of the day, they're learning more other businesses. They have time, they have opportunities to start other different businesses out of agriculture.
I believe agriculture is one of the ways that young people can actually take up and make a lot of money. But the fact that youths look at agriculture as something that is for old people, that is why many youths are not taking up agriculture.
Say they all do. If one thing I know, I fall but I grow. I'm walking down this road of mine, this road that I go home. So am I wrong for thinking that we could be something for real?
Welcome to the show. It's another gorgeous day and we're broadcasting cross-continental here, Jackson Vunganyi in Washington, D.C., and I'm Nadia Sami in Johannesburg, South Africa. Welcome to the show. We love having you on board. We've got more music and we've got loads more coming your way, so keep your station locked right here on The Voice of America. We've seen new business models emerge over the last decade in many sectors, and a lot of them rely heavily on technology-based improvements in, for productivity and changes in distribution associated with the internet. This would be a great opportunity for entry by many young Africans who are interested in technology. And you don't necessarily have to think of agriculture in terms of, you know, being on the land and working the land. You can be a distributor, work in supply chain management, packing, packaging, etc. Whatever you do to advance the agricultural sector advances you professionally and the community as a whole and promotes nation building.
Sub-Saharan Africa has a large and growing population of young people, and yet we've seen little job creation in the formal sector. Some experts say that agriculture is 11 times more effective at reducing poverty in sub-Saharan Africa than in other sectors. Kenneth Wameo is a veterinarian in Nairobi, Kenya. We talked about some of the reasons why young people stay away from jobs in the agriculture sector.
Agriculture is very important in our country in the sense that it's the biggest employer of the citizens in the land.
Okay.
We are talking about a population of about 40 million Kenyans, and about 75% of us derive a livelihood from agriculture.
So 75% are some sort of either subsistence farmers or commercial farmers in one way or another?
Yes, the bulk of them are subsistence farmers. We have, and the smaller percentage is commercial farming. The smaller percentage, let's say 25, feeds the country, and the other 75% just live off it.
Are there any young people that are actually engaged in agricultural activities or farming activities?
Okay, lately, the percentage has declined rapidly because we find that the youth have tended to shun agriculture, but we have been, as a country, we have been trying to encourage people to continue with agriculture because of the importance of food crops and employment per se. But the youth have tended to head for white-collar jobs.
And why is that? Why don't they find farming attractive?
I think they would associate it with their upbringing because you find the bulk of Kenya in the rural areas in terms of percentage. Very few are in the town. So they are associated with poverty, with dirt. So they don't want to go back to the farm. They want to remain in the cities and look for white-collar jobs. They don't see that you can earn a living from agriculture.
Are there any examples of successful individuals in the farming sector in Kenya that somebody you could refer to and say, listen, this person is a farmer and he makes a good living out of what he does? And you need to have some sort of land capital, you know, not a lot of capital depending on what type of farming you want to do. But how accessible is land for a younger person?
Now, to own land, that is difficult because what has happened over time is that we had large portions of land, let's say, at independence. You'd find one family would have maybe 5-10 acres. But over time, the culture here has been that your family or the boys in the family inherit land. So over time, land has diminished in terms of acreage per person. And then you realize now it's not profitable to farm on smaller parcels of land. So land is expensive if you want to buy it. The capital is expensive to acquire in the sense that getting collateral from the banks, we have high interest rates. So I think those two issues have also been a deterrent. but where families own land, they have continued with subsistence farming, but then the setback has been it's not profitable given the diminishing returns.
Dr. Kenneth Wameo in Nairobi, Kenya, thank you very much for talking to us today.
Thank you too, Captain.
If you're just joining us, this is Upfront on the Voice of America. We're still talking agriculture as a viable and alternative source of employment for African youth. This is a sector, Jackson, that continues to be shunned by young people. We see it all the time. Young people would rather explore white-collar jobs in offices and other sectors, a lot of them moving to the cities, preferring that hustle and bustle of city life. But we know that agriculture can be both profitable and fun to engage in as a passion or profession, and we've seen many cases where young people do apply themselves to this profession. It's been rewarding, and we've seen a lot of creativity coming to the fore. And we're blessed with our natural resources, right? We're blessed with a continent that is overall rich and fertile. In many corners of this continent, we find that it can sustain crop life for most of the year, and that is a gem in and of itself. Investing both time and resources in agriculture should be encouraged really by communities and by governments that seek to create employment for youth and solve issues related to food security. These are very real issues on the continent.
So there are some young people who actually want to explore jobs in farming, to want to be farmers or aspire to be farmers, but don't find an opportunity or an entry point to start or where to start from. Judy Stewart in South Africa started an organization called Future Farmers, where she searches and selects aspiring individuals who are passionate about farming and trains them to become farm managers or farm owners by offering them intensive apprenticeship on regional and global farms. I reached her in Howick, South Africa.
The organization that I work for is called Future Farmers. Our job is to try and source young people who have a passion for farming but have no opportunity to get into farming, and then to help them to become commercial farmers.
What was your inspiration to start Future Farmers?
I started Future Farmers in about 2006, and I did it because I encountered some children at an agricultural show who were showing animals and obviously really enjoying it. And I said to them, well, now that you're going to be finishing school, what are you going to do? Are you going to be going to an agricultural college? And all of these children said, no, we can't pursue our passion in agriculture because there's no money. And I decided at that point that we couldn't afford to neglect this genuine desire to farm. And so I said to the kids, you've got no money, I've got no money, but I know people who might be able to help you. Let's set up an apprenticeship program.
Setting up an apprenticeship program with already established farmers.
That's correct. I approached then a number of farmers that I knew well, successful commercial farmers, and I said to them, please, won't you take on one of these young people, pay them minimum wage, give them an opportunity to learn the trade.
Now, I don't know many people who would say that they found a group of young people who have a passion in farming. Is this something that is common in Howick, given that it's a farming town?
It's not common to Howick. There are very few people from Howick who are on my program. People come to me from all over South Africa. There's a culture of farming in this country that goes back many generations. And although the majority of the young people today want to live in cities, there are still those out there.
Okay.
Who, I think it's almost genetic. They were just born loving animals and loving plants, and wanting to be out in the country and producing food.
Now, part of the legacy of apartheid was that most of the farming land or most of the commercial farming was owned by white farmers. Do you take that into consideration when you're choosing the young people that are going to be to go into this apprenticeship? Are they mainly young black South Africans who, you know, take interest or you are interested in?
The young people that I work with are nearly all black, but I don't like to refer to anyone by their race.
Okay.
You know, the apartheid government disappeared 20 years ago, and that's a long time. And I think we need to start looking at people as people, not as black people or white people or anything else. I want to try and develop young people to have a passion, because if they have a passion, they will be successful. And I'm interested in seeing them as successful commercial farmers. There are lots and lots of programs in this country and, in fact, throughout Africa that are helping African farmers to become small-scale and subsistence farmers. But there don't seem to be any programs that are helping them to become top commercial farmers. And they are just as capable of doing that as anybody else.
And how long is the apprenticeship or the program that they go through at Future Farmers?
The apprenticeship, I would say, must be a minimum of 2 years. But in some cases, they need more time than that. We send them overseas when we feel that they are competent and confident.
Is there any education requirement for them to join the program? And also, in general, is there an education requirement? You have to have a certain amount of education to become a successful farmer?
I don't require any education from them. What I want is passion, and I will take young people who don't have a matric, they haven't even finished school, usually because there hasn't been money for them to finish school. I don't discriminate against anybody. I take people with university degrees, I take people with agricultural diplomas, but they all come to me on an equal footing. So I will say to them, whether you've got an agricultural degree or whether you've just come from school, you know nothing about farming. You start on minimum wage and you work your way up. You have to prove that you're worth something.
Judy, thank you very much for talking to us today.
Thank you so much for giving me the opportunity to share this with you.
I know.
One of the main factors that impede on the agriculture sector is where the farming itself takes place, the land. Even though much of Africa is blessed with good soil, good land, some places are just not able to sustain crop life to the extent that it would be profitable for anybody to enter into that sector. Dr. Meles Temesgen in Ethiopia invented an agricultural device, IBA BBM, which can be used to plow lands that are usually saturated with water. And this device helps to facilitate the drying out of this land and making it usable and cultivatable. We spoke on the phone from his offices in Addis Ababa, Ethiopia. Dr. Melissa Temesgen, welcome to the Voice of America. Tell us a little bit about your IBA BBM technology. What does it do?
The IBA BBM technology is a simple device that helps smallholder farmers easily drain excess water from waterlogged fields. There are some 7.6 million hectares of vertisol in the Ethiopian highlands alone, out of which only 2 million hectares is used for crop production, mainly because of waterlogging problem. IBA BBM is used to construct broadbed and furrow that drains waterlogged fields and enables farmers to convert unused land into high-yielding plots, while up to tripling the grain yield of wheat in already cultivated fields. The implement is a multi-purpose. It can be used to conserve moisture in dry areas and also for small-scale irrigation.
This is quite a revolutionary technology in that Ethiopians are going to have at their disposal 5 million hectares of land, which was previously not being used. Is that correct?
Yes, that's right.
How long did it take you to work on this machine?
It took me more than 5 years.
And you were doing it as part of a study? Is it a personal project that you're working on?
Well, I did it on a personal basis. I was teaching at Addis Ababa University, and I did this on my spare time. Earlier, I used to be conducting research in one of the government institutions, but after I did my PhD, I joined Addis Ababa University, and I was teaching there and doing some research, which is actually different from the development of high-bar PPM. I developed high-bar PPM.
Now, aside from making land that was previously unusable, how else will this machine change crop production?
Well, in already cultivated fields, it can also be used to improve productivity. And farmers have reported up to more than tripling their yield of wheat. For instance, they say they used to get from 0.5 to 1.5 tons of wheat per hectare, but now because they are using IBAR PPM, they get from 4 to 6 and some say 7 tons per hectare. That is because the waterlogged fields give low yields. Many people talk about shortage of moisture. Of course, there are a large area of land in Ethiopia where you have this moisture problem. But at the same time, you also have this huge problem of waterlogged fields that can make farmers vulnerable. And in one region, which is called Oromia region, there is one district where villages have now been transformed from regular food aid seekers into surplus producers because of the drainage of the verticals. They have the land, they have the water, they have everything, but because the water is excess, they cannot produce so much yield. So with this technology, they are able to drain the excess water and use the high potential of those vertisols to up to triple their yields. And there's also a report I recently got says that one farmer got 8.1 tons of wheat per hectare from a low-yielding field, while another got 7.4 tons of wheat per hectare from a field that has never been used for crop production.
Wow. That is quite a revolutionary. That's quite big. I feel like this is one of the biggest agriculture technology inventions in generations on the continent. How affordable is it to the people? How accessible is it to the farmers in Ethiopia?
It is affordable because at the moment it is sold at $13. And that's not very much because the farmers, for instance, pay for a 100 kilogram of fertilizers very close to $80 or more, which is used only for 1 year and only on 1 hectare. But this IBAR BBM can be used on several hectares and it can be used for in several years. So the affordability is not a question.
And is it easy to maintain?
It's very easy to maintain. And it's very easy to use because it is so simple. It has been made so simple that farmers take maybe 15 or 20 minutes to be trained on how to use it.
What is it about the technology? How does it exactly work? How does it take out the moisture from the soil? If you can, you know, explain it simply or briefly to our listeners, this relatively simple tool that... Yeah, I mean, for you to be able to sell it for $13, that means you're not using a lot of complex machinery or technology.
No.
Can you explain to us exactly how it works? Yeah.
Well, it's so simple that it is attached to the frames of the traditional tillage implement in Ethiopia. And there is a ridging part which makes a furrow, which opens a furrow. And there is also a part that makes the bed. So it makes a furrow to let the water out, and then it makes a bed on which the seeds and fertilizers are placed. So it places the seeds and fertilizer on the bed, and then it makes a furrow that lets the water drain out of the field.
Where does the excess water go?
In some cases, if there is an area where you can drain the water, it's just drained to the natural waterways like small streams. But in some cases where you don't have those streams nearby, what we do is we dig a pond and we store the water in the pond. So the field that drains
into that pond,
close to the pond.
So the water can actually be reused again for other purposes?
Yes, yes. In fact, what farmers are now doing is they harvest their wheat first, and then they plant leguminous crops like chickpea, which also improves the soil fertility, within a year. And then sometimes the chickpea suffers from moisture stress because that is the time when the rains have already stopped. So what farmers do is they use that stored water to apply supplementary irrigation to the chickpea or leguminous crop. So they can drain the water and move that harmful water. Actually, it is harmful because I say it reduces the yield because it is there. Now, they move that out of the field and store it somewhere, tripling their main crop yield, and then being able to grow another crop, which is double cropping. And there is also one farmer in Bertrand area who harvested his wheat, and then he grew chickpea on the residual moisture. He did not need to apply supplementary irrigation because there was enough moisture. And then he used that water stored in the pond to grow vegetables.
So you can do it three times in a year? Because I know usually they did only once in a year for a certain amount of land.
Yeah, they used to do only once. But now they are doing it up to three times, a maximum of three times. And this has been really, the farmer's acceptance has been very enormous. And some farmers have nicknamed the technology Yet Nebers, which means where have you been?
Where have you been? That's very, very interesting. I mean, this is a very transformational piece of technology. It's going to transform their lives. It's going to transform communities and societies. Do you plan to expand to take this outside of Ethiopia? I know you're still selling it in Ethiopia right now, and many people still have not been able to access it or to get it yet. But at some point, do you see yourself taking it outside of the Ethiopian borders, maybe selling it outside into other parts of Africa?
Yes, yes. The immediate market would be South Sudan. But now, at the moment, there's a problem of this conflict. But once this conflict settles, then the next market would be South Sudan, where you have a vast area of vertisols. And then we'll also move to other parts of Africa. This technology can serve the whole of sub-Saharan Africa. As I said earlier, the technology is multi-purpose, and that it can be used to conserve moisture in dry areas. So farmers in dry areas can also use it.
Thank you very much for listening to Upfront on the Voice of America. I would like to thank my co-host Nadia Sam in Johannesburg, South Africa. We would also like to thank all our listeners who contributed to the show this time around. And if you have any questions or comments or want to contribute to the show in future, remember to send us an email at upfront@voanews.com.